Good morning. How are you this morning? You did HR out of the gate at 9 o'clock. Give yourself a round of applause. My goodness. All right. Well, the good news is I get to make a fun announcement that you have drinks and coffee in the hallway out here if you need them throughout the. Isn't that a good idea to do at 9 o'clock? But anyway, it's all set up for you. So I promised Miss Linda that I would say that they were out there. So if you need an extra cup of coffee during this presentation or a little bit of caffeine from the soda line, it is all out there. All right. So with this, I'm starting this morning on a question that all of you had called attracting your talent and retaining your employees. That's a tough topic. And we have some of the PowerPoint is on your tables. We're handing that out right now. And as we follow through today with the panel, there's also a pink piece of paper. These have some of the graphics on them. This will be available to you on your website as well, but it allows you not to squint, so, and it makes it a little bit easier to see. So I believe they're getting ready to switch to my PowerPoint. Yes? Wonderful. Thank you. All right. Right out of the gate, I want to tell you that you're not alone. Truth of the matter is that employee turnover is affecting every organization, and it goes across the country, New York to California, up and down, in Canada as well. And even India and China are beginning to experience high rates of turnover. So it's not just a national problem, it's global. It doesn't matter if you're a small company, multinational, if you're selling, you're importing, exporting, or doing a service. You're just not alone in this boat. The fight for talent is something that we're constantly going to have. This is a particular graphic that looks at drivers of retention. How many of you have heard a lot of these before? That it's all about the job design and work. How many have heard that? You can raise your hand. I promise I won't call on you yet. All right. How about it's all about continuing career opportunities within your organization? Or characteristics of the employer? It's all about the rewards and benefits that you give. How many have heard that? Yeah, that's a big one out there. How many have tried all the above and it's not working yet? Be honest. It's okay. We know. Well, the questions that we need to take a look at is are do the people actually leave the jobs? Are people leaving our people? And what can we control that is in this list for the drivers of retention? And I'm going to tell you it's different for every single organization. So now I've put the ball back in your lap and said, oh, I have to know the organizational characteristics before I take a look at how I'm going to retain my employees. I wish I could give you a quick fix, but I can't. But I will tell you that if you did a quick Google search on why employees leave you, a million reasons are going to come up. In fact, I did it just the other day, and it's over now 100 pages of results and growing daily. But the most common cause that repeats itself again and again and again is interpersonal conflict between supervisors and employees. It's something in the personal makeup, and it includes attitude, communication style, different approaches to work, and something is just rubbing it the wrong way. They just don't get along. The second reason that pops into play is they have no confidence in the leadership of the organization. Employees want that better leadership from senior management. And if they lack faith in the leadership of the organizations, the retentions will decrease. Bottom line here is they're going to leave you. And sometimes when we're trying to do the right thing and do the corporate social responsibility and be a building part of our communities, something gets twisted in the media. Anybody have been a victim of that? And it doesn't work in our favor. So there's always has to be a backup plan for A, B, and C. But I will tell you, there is hope. there are ways to do this that we can hopefully give you today to make retention actually work for your organizations. And that's why I have brought this group of panelists with me. We are only an hour away from you in Georgia, so technically we're part of South Carolina too. We'll just go with that, okay? All right. All right. First to join us today, I have Wade Herring. Wade is a partner in the Savannah office of Hunter McLean Attorneys. Now, you always have to have an attorney, right? Okay, so the good news is you can ask all the legal questions you want. He's here. He didn't like that I just said that. Okay, so, but Wade's practice focuses on all aspects of employment problems and issues, including internal employment practices, wage and hour, drug testing, sexual harassment, equal opportunity, and the Americans with Disabilities Act, and of course, employee benefits. So Wade, I'd like to welcome you up to the panel. Our next panelist is Ms. Sherry Sale, and she is the current president for the Savannah Area Chapter of the Society of Human Resource Management. Her background in human resources extends and includes both in the private and public industry, as well as in medical, manufacturing, and governmental capacities. And she's been working in human resources as a generalist and as a human resources manager since 2000. Sherry also serves the Georgia Sherm State Council. She does a lot of the awards and recognitions, and we're going to be working a little bit with that at the end of the presentation. Sherry, I'd like to welcome you to the panel. Morning. And last but not least, I have Blanche Eden-Ganan. Blanche is the Corporate Director of Human Resources and Safety for the Bradley Dixie Companies, Dixie Ply. It's a wholesale distributor of plywood, lumber, building materials, and specialty products. Someone you might know somewhere in your land of hardwood. But Blanche has been with the company for the past 21 years, and she's responsible for all aspects of human resources for the company, including payroll, training, and additionally, she's responsible for safety to include OSHA and the DOT. Blanche, I'd like to welcome you to the panel, and can everyone give our panel a round of applause?
Good morning.
All right, so based upon some of the questions that we had discussions that with Linda and that you all had, we've come up with five areas of discussion that we're going to hit today. One, are employees leaving you after 3 or 5 years or during your first 12 months, and why? Are you providing young professionals and everyone with enough opportunities, and what is the actual target? Are you providing enough opportunities for advancement, and how are you doing so? Are wages and benefits competitive, and do they meet the needs of multi-general workforces? And are employment contracts and agreements something that is needed for you? So coming right out of the gate, we're going to start with the first piece. Are employees leaving after 3 or 5 years or during the first 12 months, and why, and how are you handling that? And this is, of course, all part of what we call the employee life cycle. I'm going to open the panel with Ms. Blanche Ganan. And Blanche, are you ready? All right. She thinks so. All right. Go ahead. So what do you think, Blanche? Are employees leaving us in the first 3 to 5 years or during the first 12 months? And tell us what Dixie Ply is doing.
Well, most of our hourly employees, of course, we have, you know, our truck drivers and forklift operators, and that's where our greatest turnover is. You know, they come in, and we spend all that time, of course, on the recruitment piece and the training and things of that nature, and unfortunately, they leave. A lot of times, they'll leave just because somebody offers them a little bit more money. A lot of times they're not thinking about the benefits. We try to, focus on our benefits. Of course, you know, not only, you know, your insurances, but other benefits in the company. We try for our truck drivers to, remind them, you know, we provide uniforms and the safety boots and our equipment. You know, all of our trucks are new and things of that nature. So we, you know, we have nice equipment, and even to that level, we try to remind employees of that. But, you know, we always fight that net pay issue with them. The other thing, though, we find is we have a lot of rehires where people do leave, and they realize the grass isn't always greener, so we have that new rehire piece, which is good. Sometimes you want them back, sometimes you don't. But when we do want them back, we try to do that, and it's usually a better relationship long term. You know, again, you know, I know we're not talking about benefits here, but, you know, we try to do a lot of focus on that. You know, the retirement plan's key. We go around, you know, in our company to all of our locations. We have 11 distribution centers, and we try to go on site each year for open enrollment and actually do one-on-one meetings with the employees. We bring in the providers from the retirement plan and things of that nature, and it allows them not to just, you know, do something online, you know, an online enrollment, or you know, where they just get a packet. So the company, you know, it's a family-owned business. They've been around 77 years, and the business actually started with a mill in Savannah, Georgia. So we've closed the mill, and now we're just distribution centers. But that family concept, and I believe that's a lot of what's in the room here as well with some of your companies, it's that, you know, we always say welcome to the Dixie Ply family, and so we try to communicate that down the line to our employees by, you know, doing these things, you know, sort of coming out and meeting with them and things like that. The long term, you know, we have those long term employees as well. It's not unusual. You know, I've got a 73-year-old truck driver that's been with the company. We have people retired that's been there 40 plus years. Of course, with the economic downturn years ago, you know, all of our managers stayed with us, and that has something to say about the company. And those things, you know, if you have those in place and you realize that your employees are sticking through the hard times, that's where you really need to support, you know, them even more so, and make sure you keep them. I think in addition to the benefits, it's, you know, we try to also do, you know, training to reinforce our supervisors where they have that, you know, that same concept of, you know, these employees treating them more like family and not just somebody that's in there just to do the job. We train our supervisors on an annual basis. We try to reinforce supervisory skills. We bring in an EAP provider and some of those touchy-feely things, I guess, that some, you know, supervisors aren't really well-versed in. We do a legal session in addition to specifics, you know, to DOT and OSHA, those types of things they did have. So that, I believe, has helped us, you know, get to those, you know, frontline supervisors and where they do, you know, possibly handle those employees better.
So what I'm hearing, Blanche, I'm going to take you back for just 1 second. The rehire relationship. So sometimes are you saying it's better to let them go and then see what's on the other side and see if they have an interest in coming back?
Well, I mean, it's not always better to do that, but sometimes you just don't have a choice.
Right.
You know, because, again, especially with our truck drivers, you know, we do local delivery, so they're home every night. We try to remind them of that. You're home on the weekends. You're home every night. But those, you know, those long runs, of course, you know, pay them more. You know, and so you have to struggle with that. You know, you can only pay them so much. We try to, you know, stay competitive in our areas. We just did our annual increases, you know, across the board for the company, but we're also looking at, you know, like in Dallas, Texas, as an example, we're having a lot of turnover there, and we're using temps, and we, you know, frown on using temps, especially for our truck drivers. And just in the past 3 weeks, I've had two trucks turn over, and both were temp drivers. They just don't, you know, have the buy-in like your other employees do. And I used to have a DOT consultant. He said they're temps for a reason, you know. And so, and that's not always true. But, you know, like I said, they just turned two of our trucks over, and that's not a good thing. But with the, you know, with the truck drivers and our warehouse and just the hourly employees, you know, it's the whole you know, package that we try to remind them of. The rehires, you know, we do like to, you know, if they come back, you know, as long as they left on good terms, we understand that people, you know, everybody has to pay their bills. You know, other people tell them they've got a better, you know, deal for them, and they go for that, and then they realize, you know, it just didn't work out, and we welcome them back. We, you know, compete with, like, the Texas Pipeline, and, you know, they were paying drivers $27, $30 an hour, so we, you know, had a mass exodus out of our San Antonio location. So it's just some of those things you can't control, and you can't compete with those kind of, you know, hourly wages. But again, they were working, you know, extremely long hours, so some of those people realized that's not what they wanted to do. So they come back because of that, and I think they come back to us because once they go away, they realize, you know, well, that wasn't a terrible place to work. You know, the trucks here aren't, you know, I always have issues with them. Those trucks were nice. You know, the full benefit package, no, we don't pay them as much, possibly. But back to Dallas, you know, we realize we're low on our rates of pay. So that's something we're addressing now, and we're going to have to just go across the board and raise those hourly rates. So we try to look at those things and react when we have to or when we can. We can't always be competitive or the highest, you know, paying company, and so that's when you've got to reinforce those other areas that, you know, of things you offer, and hopefully get that across to the employees. And as long as your supervisors are trained to communicate that, of course, that helps.
And then one other thing I wanted to highlight, Blanche, and I'll take you off the hot seat here in a second. You mentioned a plethora of times, but we're kind of sliding through it. The in-person meetings.
Yes.
You don't, I know that things that in this day and age, online enrollments and doing everything via online with the employees and doing webinars and all these different things definitely has their place.
Right.
We agree that it does streamline it, it does save time. But the in-person meeting puts the personal touch back. And how many of those do you have a year?
Well, we go to each location at least once a year and more if we can. You know, it gives them a lot of people don't know what to ask about their benefits, or they don't understand that they have a good benefit available to them. And in those group settings with their coworkers, you know, and their peers, asking the questions or that maybe they didn't think to ask, or their comments back, you know, that helps them understand, well, yeah, this is something that I didn't realize was a good thing. You know, and if you get it in paper, number one, they don't read anything you send out. At one point in time, we used to send things out in the mail, and we even stuck little coupons in there. And we said, if you find this coupon, call us, and you got, like, a gift card. Well, nobody was calling, you know, because they weren't opening up the envelopes, or they saw it from the company, and they tossed it aside. And, you know, and or then you have the spouses. The spouses, you know, they're the ones that's taking the kids to the doctors and things like that. Well, they didn't know what the benefits were, you know, because the husband, you know, or the spouse at work signed up or didn't sign up for benefits. And so in these meetings, we even invite the spouses to come to them, you know, if they're available to do that. And we do multiple meetings. You know, we'll do like 5 a.m. meetings or 4 a.m., which is ridiculous because we have truck drivers. And we do them throughout the day so we can accommodate everybody. And so it's just worked out well. It's an expense because, you know, we're traveling out and we're staying in hotels and all of that. But, you know, it's a good thing. And like I said, we take our providers when we can along with us. And that way they get to really meet the experts and ask those questions.
Thank you. And I can say from the expense point, and I look at human resources and retention, 1.5 times the salary is what it takes to generally replace a very good person. So if you take a look at the expenses that possibly, as Blanche is talking about, they have to stay in hotels, they have to be there a few days, you take 1.5 times a couple salaries, you've saved a lot of money by sending them out there. A lot of money. All right. Moving on now to our next question. Are you providing young professionals and everyone else enough opportunities, and what's the overall target? Ms. Sherry Sale, I think you're ready to take the lead on this question, yes?
Sure.
Okay, wonderful.
Okay. The Society for Human Resources Management did a study on our workplace and how it blends together with the different generations and so forth. And what they found out was kind of interesting, that the average millennial stays in a job for approximately 2 years. But surprisingly, it wasn't that the millennials were looking for a new job, is that they were looking for new responsibilities and for new ways of being engaged within that job. And so if I could have everybody indulge me, because I think that sometimes illustrations help to define the point. If everybody could take out a piece of paper, just one of these little, just a little piece of paper. Okay, and on one side, draw a triangle. And then on the other side, draw a circle.
We're asking a lot.
I know, it's early, but you can do this. Follow me along on this.
There will be no parallelogram, I promise.
Okay, so you have one triangle and you have a circle. Under the triangle, if you would write the letters BB. And then under the circle, if you would write a big M. Okay, now, the BB stands for baby boomers. How many of us in this room are baby boomers? Okay, me too. Okay, and what were we taught? We were taught to work hard, okay? And if we worked hard and plugged along and paid our dues, that we would get this big reward at the end. Is that true? Does anybody identify with what I'm saying? Okay. And so, essentially, our focus, as a baby boomer, our focus and our perspective and our point of view is that we work hard, we look for the big win, and then we become successful. Okay? And so, what happened? The baby boomers had babies. And what did we say about these children that we had? I worked so hard that no child of mine is going to have to work as hard as I did. And I'm going to do whatever I can to give them a leg up. Has anybody ever said that? Okay, I know you did. I know you did. Okay. Like, for example, how many of us have bought children cars? Maybe. They didn't have to work for it. An iPad? Did they get a new computer every time they went off to a next level of schooling? Yes, I think they did. Did anybody pay for their education? Yeah, we did. We sure enough did. So while baby boomers have this big focus to work hard, work long, and get the big win, millennials don't think like that. They already started out sitting at the table, hence the round circle. And you invited them. You had them, did they not have an equal voice in your household? And maybe even they had the leadership voice in your household, where you asked their opinions about technology and so forth. So the perspective, I think that's something that's key in understanding who the people are in your workforce, in your blended workforce. So millennials had it a lot easier right from the start, okay? So their opinion was about as equal as your own. And they had an expectation that they were valued without even really having to work that hard. Would you agree with that? Okay. So millennials, instead of working and have the big win, millennials like little wins. And they like it all the way, because that's how they got it as they grew up. They like little perks in your businesses, and I've got like about 30 of them that you can do. Excuse me. Like little wins for them is perhaps as an employer you offer to pay for their Netflix. That's not a big deal. That's not a big investment. It's like $8.99 a month. Okay? But to them, that's something that's part of their world. They binge TV watch. Okay? Maybe every once in a while, they need more constant interaction with their supervisors to hear how they're doing. And rather than, they like things like gift cards or workplace flexibility as long as they get the job done. So So I think a successful manager or a successful leader in the workplace is going to have to shift their focus on how we see things. I mean, because haven't you been annoyed before? When you're staying after work and you have to get out of the way of the door to see the millennials run off and go home? How could they be without that lack of ethics that we have, you know? And really, I think they bring a lot of fun to the workplace, and they bring a lot of normalcy, the work-life balance that we need to possibly look at for ourselves. Most of our millennials are really super educated. They're super smart. They're very well-rounded. I mean, Mom took them around to soccer lessons, painting classes, Chinese, different types of exposures, because they wanted their children to be better. And so a successful manager needs to figure out ways to motivate them with the little wins and coming up with rewards to keep them engaged. Then I think possibly the first one that I think is the most important is to actually have that conversation, okay? And give your employees a voice. I was very lucky to have worked at Memorial Medical Hospital for a little while, and they had one of the most successful engagement campaigns that I've ever seen. And what they did was they established a club of key 100s, okay? It was a very large employer, probably not, a very large employer. So they had a key 100 group, and they were 100 employees that were nominated from their managers and their peers. And they were given a voice in every aspect of the hospital. They were given a voice. They weren't given a vote. For example, we had people sitting on the board and attending every board meeting as equals. They had a voice, not a vote, but they had a voice. So I encourage you as employers to speak with your employees and ask them what they want. Ask for their feedback. How are we doing? And to switch things up. Another thing is we need to help employees get to know one another. I mean, how often do we just see each other in the time span of the day, okay? The 9 to 5 or whatever your hours are. Have little get-togethers where you get to know each other on a more personal basis, whether that's a potluck lunch on, twice a month, or going down to the bar and have a happy hour. You know, just take somebody out of petty cash, and you get to know one another pretty loosely when you add a little bit of alcohol to the mix. And the other thing is, we need you to serve as mentors. The younger generation, millennials, they love a mentor because they have a unique, like I said, they're very educated. They're very well-rounded. But they need to have that, all that knowledge focused, and that's where we come in, the baby boomers, okay? We need to serve as a mentor. And if you see someone struggling, jump in and help them. Some really good activities that I think came from a lot of successful workplaces were to catch your employees doing something right and make it known. Maybe you need to have a wall of fame where the managers or the whatever, take a little card and perhaps with their the activity that they did correctly, and then paste it up on the board, a little hall of fame. And let your employees help brand your company. Okay, I saw a little earlier that you had some next gen activities that you're interested in. Well, have the younger ones help you to do that, help to brand your company. They can do that through social media, and they can do that through their eyes, their unique eyes. And allow the employees to structure your community event and your community presence. I think you all have a unique opportunity in that with Hardwood, there's a lot of charities that could be benefited from some of your activities of the workforce. Habitat for Humanity comes to mind. I'm sure some of you are already involved in that sort of a thing. But let your employees help you pick and run that program. The nice thing about millennials is they, once given the opportunity, is they will run with it, okay? But they need to check in with you every once in a while, and they need that little pat on the back. Something that was a novel idea, which I thought was to get rid of most of your holidays, the ones that, you know, if maybe you take off Veterans Day or President's Day or something like that, and put them in your paid time off bank, because not everybody wants to have those same holidays, and let people do what they want. Another one is a birthday breakfast or a lunch for everybody that had a birthday in that month. Have them sit with the CEO. Remember that equal presence at the table? They need to know who you are and what your goals are. And in that kind of an informal setting, it'll really help and take off. I'm just going to work because it's such a long thing and I'm hogging all the time. Apparently.
You do need to move on, but you finish up with a few of the other topics because I know that they're there.
I'm just going to run them through. Offer free drinks and healthy snacks. Massage therapists. Make your workplace fun. Take pictures of your employees and put them alongside the wall. Hire by attitude and fire by attitude. Allow a junior member to sit in on interviews, clarify the goals, and have photo contests, peer-to-peer recognitions, and don't just use money as a reward. And have an awards night, and let employees work in other departments.
I think Sherry's encompassed a great part about what the millennial workforce can bring to you if we invest in what's important to them. Just remember that they're a very confident group when they walk out of the gate. For right or for wrong, they are very confident. They're very social. They do appreciate diversity. They are goal-oriented, like all of us, believe it or not, but they're extreme multitaskers. But the biggest piece is they are collaborators, and they do want a seat at that table in some way, shape, or form to add value to your organization. Our next piece is about career advancement and are we providing enough opportunities to advance? I'm going to put Blanche back on the seat just for a minute to talk about how they do some pieces for their supervisors.
Okay. Well, of course, we always try to recruit from within, and that's always nice. We have an older workforce, so we're welcoming some of them to decide to retire so we can have some other advancement opportunities in the company. I think we all struggle now with people working longer, and so that sort of stalls out some of those opportunities. But we, of course, for training, we have salespeople. We do training on that. Again, we try to support our supervisors and reinforce their skills, with annual training to prepare them, of course, to move into a higher position. For our hourly employees, when you look at, your people in the warehouses and things of that nature, we've luckily been able to move a lot of those people into warehouse manager positions, and that comes with its own struggles. When you're one of the guys and all of a sudden now you're the supervisor, that comes along with some issues, but we've been able to work through that. Again, when we have a new manager come in to a position, I go on site with them and of course sit with them and go through all the company policies and procedures. So again, there's that support, from the corporate office, and we spend time and make sure they understand everything, and anything that we expect of them as a company, we try to walk through that and spend time with them to make sure that they understand, and so they're just not thrown into the position and said, here's your new responsibilities. And so I think that's a good thing. Again, it's an expense to the company for me to go out like that and stay a couple of days, but I think it's a nice thing that we do. I think they appreciate it. I think the managers of the locations appreciate that as well. Again, that investment into that new supervisor or that new manager. So that's a key thing, I believe, is just to support them and not just give them that new title.
Those are some really great pieces. And additionally, we've broken these down again with our workforce into the employee life cycle. And we've put this up here that when a person's coming on, Blanche is talking a lot too about the onboarding and the buddy programs and the support. Sherry has mentioned to you career mentoring, you know, reach out and do that career mentoring and give them the investment in the company itself. Your middle level managers like the leadership development because they want to become someone with higher potential. Diversity is a big hit. We are now a global market, whether we want to dive in or not. We are a part of a global market and a global economy. And last but not least, when you have the senior employees, the succession planning and knowledge transfer is key. And it's not something that we're trying to force that employee out, but they have a plethora of knowledge. I've heard many of you say in the years past of working with you, and Blanche has already mentioned it today, and so has Sherry, that some of these people have been with us, especially in our baby boomer generation, for 20, 30, 40 years. They have an incredible amount of knowledge. So when they walk out the door and they do actually go into retirement and they don't look back, that knowledge goes with them. So a supportive way to have that succession plan and knowledge transfer is something that we need to put in place. And it's okay to have that there. It's not something that says you have to retire tomorrow. It's just part of the life cycle that we're trying to expand. And it's giving back to our companies. The next question that has often come up, are wages and benefits competitive? And do they meet the needs of a multi-generational workforce? Blanche and Sherry can briefly hit on this, and they have already. Blanche, you're working on a piece in Dallas right now.
Right.
Because of wages, you said, with truck drivers. Is that something you're doing a competitive study on, or is that something that you're just trying to meet, like, the local levels? How are you approaching that?
We are doing a competitive study on that and, just doing some inquiries around to customers and suppliers similar to, our company and of course, then data that we have our hands on. And we are low. We're lower than the other companies in the area. And it's not something we do on a regular basis, maybe like we should. But, our company, based on what the locations are, there's different rates of pay. We have some drivers that make $18, $20 an hour, and then we have some that make $14 to $16 an hour, depending on what city they're in. So, we're just in different states and different cities, and so it varies. But we do try to address that. And, of course, what brings this usually to our attention is the high turnover. And so when we have that high turnover, that's one of the things that we look at is, what's the issue? Is it the benefits? Is it the supervisor? Is it the pay? And so we don't do a good job with exit interviews. That's something I wish we did a better job with. And, that's a nice thing to have when people are leaving you, to find out why they're leaving you and actually pin them down. And, of course, they always want to share that if they're unhappy. So that's hard. It's not hard to get that information from them. But, you can find patterns through that. The other thing we try to do is look at, when we're hiring in new employees, to really get them to fill out their applications fully, because a lot of times you can find out on that, off of that application, what did they make at their last job, and what did this company pay versus what we're paying. And so that's also a good tool to use, is to, the other companies, the competitors and companies similar to us, what are they paying? And so, hopefully they're pretty truthful on those applications, and that's another source of information.
Thank you. What I've shown behind you actually is this is a graph from the U.S. Bureau of Labor Statistics. Now, please realize that these do not update every year. Notice it says 2009. All right, that's the closest one I can get for you right now, because some of these update every 5 years, and some do every 7 on a cycle, and some do every 10. However, this kind of looks at the civilian, private industry, and state and local government, but you can see on average where the civilian salary sits, plus that's in the green, and then private industry, and then state and local government. So civilians at $20.50 in 2009, private was at $19.45, and then you had an average in the state and local government of $26.24. Then they added on the benefits cost to the employer, and you're looking at civilian at about $8.90 at that time, private industry at $8.05, and then state and local government at $13.60. State and local government tends to trend at a higher benefit piece as well. That's just general across the board. But if you look, overall cost per employee on average, $29.40, $27.49, and then $39.83 respectively across, that's what we're investing in some of these employees. And that was in 2009, and this has only gone up, all right, since then. We'll get another one of these in about a year and a half, so we'll see the difference in the 10-year span. And of course, too, at this point, we were coming out of a recessional piece in 2008. So you can imagine where these numbers are going to be in the next year and a half and what we're spending. And that's a lot to invest in an employee in order to lose them. And I think that's where we get hit very, very hard. So the advancement is something that we want to take a look at, because with that investment, we want to keep them. All right, so what I like to call the piece de resistance, are employment contracts, agreements needed, and what is the attorney's take on employment, retention, and what are we doing? Notice anybody that Wade's been very quiet?
Listening.
Uh-huh. Well, he's not anymore, I promise. Mr. Wade Herring, I love this. I had to put this up because it says, my mistake was bringing a lawyer to settle the terms of my employment contract. They hired the lawyer instead. All right. Wade, you know I love you very much. Take it away.
All right. Well, before we get to the question of contracts, I want to back up and talk about how companies approach the hiring process. And here's the takeaway. Most companies hire fast and fire slow. My advice to you would be to hire slow and fire fast. And we can talk about that in greater detail if you want to. But again, let's talk about how companies put themselves out there in the hiring process. What does your company say about your local workforce? Well, our CEO participated in a chamber forum in which everyone talked about how sorry the local workforce is, how the schools aren't doing a good job, everybody's on drugs, and a convicted felon. That's the message that we put out there about what we think of our local workforce. Well, how do you brand your company? Well, we have a logo. Well, that's good, but how else are you branding your company? Do you have social media? If you do have social media, how often do you update it? If you have social media, are you using video? Do you have relationships with schools? And I don't just mean your technical colleges and your community colleges. I mean your high schools and your middle schools. And are you bringing those students into your workplace? Do you, as a company, participate in any community activities and you wear your company T-shirts? Do you have any relationships with churches and with civic groups? Then when we talk about getting that employee who's applying for the job here, complete these forms, but you can only complete them in this certain way, on this certain day, in this certain place. Oh, and have you ever been convicted of a felony? And oh, by the way, we're going to drug test you. Please fill out these consent forms where we can do complete background checks. Our company motto is, we've always done it this way. We've never done it that way. We tried that once, but it didn't work. The interview process, oh, so glad you could be here. The manager who's actually going to supervise you, he was too busy to be here. Sorry. And this hiring stuff is really kind of an aggravation, isn't it? But we'll get through this with somebody who's not going to work with you. Then you hire the person, and the first thing you do is you give them a handbook, and in a very small paragraph, the handbook says, welcome to our team. Then below the handbook, below the welcome to the team in great big all cap letters, it says, you are an employee at will. We can fire you at any time. This handbook is not a contract. We can change the rules at any time, and we do not have to tell you we are changing the rules. And some lawyer probably helped you draft that handbook. Some lawyer also probably told you to do background checks and drug testing. Training is first day. That's the training, first day, and you'll catch on after that. Feedback. We're going to give you a 90-day evaluation, except we never really get to the 90-day evaluation. We're going to give you an annual evaluation, but we're going to be late giving you the annual evaluation. We're not going to give you any narrative. We're going to give you all excellence and very goods. Everybody's excellent and everybody's very good. If it meets expectations, somehow that's become a bad thing. That's the feedback we're going to give you. Oh, and that bad actor over there that everybody knows is a bad actor, they're going to be ignored for 18 months. No one's going to do anything about them because the manager and supervisor doesn't like confrontation, and the manager or supervisor is afraid if they go to HR, HR is going to tell them they have to do all this stuff, and they don't want to do all of that stuff. And somehow, by the way, the discipline and coaching process took on a negative connotation rather than a positive connotation. That's how you coach people and teach people to be successful. Oh, and all this business about the baby boomers and the millennials, that's not the problem. The Gen X and the Gen Ys, they're the real pain in the ass. The baby boomers and the millennials, get along just fine. After all, the baby boomers parented those millennials. And if you do let them have that voice and explain the why to them, I find that millennials are actually very good employees. Baby boomers, though, when you start thinking about your legacy of work, you need to start thinking about passing on that knowledge and that long-term view of your company and how to sustain your company into the future. We're not going anywhere immediately by choice, but sometimes we don't have a choice about when we exit, so we need to go ahead and be thinking about those things. Now, just a personal note, I'm obviously a baby boomer, and I'm not planning to retire. That seems very dismal to me. You get to spend a lot of time with your spouse and do a lot of yard work. That's what that looks like. also financially, you know, the recession didn't cooperate. I haven't saved the way I should have. And my adult children continued to suck the lifeblood out of me. So baby boomers aren't retiring, but we do have, we're not retiring by choice, but that's another issue when we think about retention. Baby boomers are already reaching the point where they're still in the job, and because of just the natural process of aging and disability, they can't do the job, and you've got the Age Discrimination and Employment Act and the Americans with Disabilities Act, so that's a different kind of retention issue. But again, for those of us who are in leadership roles, we need to think about what processes are we putting in place to create long-term value for the company and to sustain the company going forward. So let me come to contracts. Most companies do not use contracts for most employees. Maybe your CEO has a contract. Even then, in many smaller to mid-sized companies, that would be rare. The contracts I do see for employees typically tend to be about non-competes. That typically tends to be the kind of contract I see for sort of rank-and-file employees. And even then, they're a funny kind of contract that when you get to the part that where there should be a term of employment, it still says, you are an employee at will, and we can fire you at any time. And there's nothing in the, quote, contract about the obligations of the employer. So if you're going to do contracts for employees as a response to this retention issue, I think you need to think about the contract differently. It should have a term longer than we can fire you at any time. And it should have some obligations on the part of the company. And if you look at the service companies, particularly in the hospitality industry in this country, the Ritz-Carltons, the Walt Disneys, some of those companies that have done a really, really good job on customer service, they also do a really, really good job on employee training and retention. And they make big commitments to their employees in writing about what they're going to do for those employees. So all of these things that we've been talking about the training, the career map, the mentoring, the coaching, what we're really talking about is values. And if you're going to do that and put it into a contract, you need to be prepared to put that in writing and outline what it is the company is going to do. So that circles right back to what I said at the outset. This takes a lot of time. It takes a lot of time and a lot of effort. In terms of, well, you don't want to be locked into a contract, the ones I've seen that have this value proposition from the employer to employee, there's usually an out, of course, for for-cause behavior, and you get to define what for-cause is. And there's also a bigger out in case of an economic downturn, and so the company still has some outs. You're not permanently locked into that relationship. But if you're going to think about contracts as a response to this retention issue, then I think you need to think about contracts differently than the way most companies have thought about contracts for employees.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. So you're saying that my generation is mean? Just asking. Okay, I'm Gen X. How the heck? No, that's okay. We are a pain, I will tell you. We are, because we're sitting right in the middle. So, all right. As we wind down for you all, the last piece that we wanted to take a look at, and I think Blanche, Sherry, and Wade have all hit this, is to identify the actions that make employees feel appreciated and increase employee commitment and loyalty. And it is thinking from a different angle, thinking outside the box, so to speak. Sherry had some just quick summary pieces that she wanted to share with you. She does do awards and recognitions for us in the state of Georgia. And times have changed. It is a little bit different now with what we are looking at and how we do awards. So, Sherry?
Yeah, I do want to kind of circle back on some of the things that the other panelists talked about. When it comes to performance evaluations, they are so going by the wayside. That is almost so yesterday. To wait and to save your commentary on how someone works for a whole year, that does not suit your workforce today. They need immediate and constant feedback. I would recommend a lot more one-on-one and catching them doing something right. And if you see that they're struggling, become a mentor, become a coach, and approach it from that way. The other thing is I wanted to point out about was don't just use money as a reward, okay? Money's great, but I think that the workforce today likes to also feel that they're making a difference, that all that the activity and the time that they spend during their day is making a difference in the world, something they can pin their hat on, those community activities and so forth. In addition, I would like to say, keep in mind that some of the best, if you start to think about, you know, what are the best companies to work for in the United States, you start thinking of the Googles and the T-Mobiles and the things like that. Why are they good? They keep it fun. They change it up. They don't do the same old, and they have a lot of interaction with their employees. And they ask them, what is it you want? What are we doing well? What can we get rid of? And you know the nice thing is you don't have to come up with all these ideas yourself. Let them come up with it. So I would challenge you as leaders of your organizations to do shake it up and do something different right when you get back. You all are here getting motivated and energized because you're getting some additional education, why not bring in a motivational speaker once a quarter to all of your employees and get them all fired up? A lot of times we forget about we educate the top shelf of the organization, and we forget how good that feels and how motivating it can be. So bring in a motivational speaker, and I'm going to tell you where to get them, and I'm going to tell you where to get them cheap. You can go to any SHRM chapter, and there's usually a plethora of motivational speakers there, and they'll be happy to speak. So you can just go to your area and find them right there. There's always a big plethora of people that want to speak there. So, well, that's
any state that you're in, so you know, if you look up the Society of Human Resource Management, let's say Pennsylvania, and then you'll probably get the state council. The state council website will list all the local chapters. Find the one local to you and get a hold of the president or their programming director, and you could have a speaker relatively quickly. It's pretty easy. Pretty easy. Lynn is up here nodding at me. It's how she found me years ago. So, and I will say just two different things. Leading the state of Georgia with SHRM and doing some things, I have the challenges. I have over, you know, a plethora of, I can tell you about 90 to 100 volunteers. And I have to have meetings with them. Again, educational things that they have to do, but they volunteer their time. They don't get paid for that, and neither do I. So what the heck can I do to bring them somewhere, and what can I do to make it easy? Can I tell you, in a leadership meeting, when I told them that they could wear, in a winter one, that they could wear jeans and sweatshirts, and I put them in our North Georgia mountains for 2 days, they were happy as a clam. When I told them when they were near the coast that they could wear shorts and flip-flops, they were even happier to come. And the biggest thing is, on a 95-degree day, I had something called an ice cream social. They had more to talk about the sundaes that they were getting to make than happy to sit in the room and listen. Very small. All things, but they made huge differences. And when I did the surveys, they may not be my employees, but I still work with them as volunteers. I will tell you, a lot of them brought those ideas back to their employees, and then their surveys and everything, it was those small things that made the difference. So again, did it cost me anything to lower a dress code? Did it cost me anything a little bit to have ice cream sundaes? Sure, but I'm gonna have coffee and a break anyway. So why not spend it on something a little bit fun and different? Again, it would just made a little bit of a difference, and that's what they talked about. I got more, I loved the ice cream on the survey, and that was good because that meant that they came to the session, and that was the whole point. So with that being said, our time with you today is running out, but we will be around for the rest of the day, and we're going to be at a round table later at 3:30, so please come and see us. Is there any pending question out there that anyone has right now? Yes.
What would be considered a best practice? Say you have an employee who's a good employee.
Uh-huh.
They're aging 65 to 75. They don't want to stop working, but they're getting to a point where they probably should. What would be the best practice for that situation? To have an age where people are required to retire, or to have some policy, what that policy would look like?
Okay. I'll let Wade take that, I think. Yes.
You're not allowed to have mandatory retirement except for owners and shareholders, basically. So a mandatory retirement age is illegal for employees. So what you address that as a performance issue. It's also okay to talk to all employees about what are your plans for 5 years from now? What are your plans for 10 years from now? I wouldn't just pick out the old feeble-looking ones to have that conversation with. but you can have that conversation with everybody. And for that hardworking person who really has tried to ignore the idea of retirement, the idea is to get them to thinking about that. And again, there may be some resources that the company can bring to bear, you know, Social Security and Medicare, but you let the employee take the lead, but it's okay for you to start that conversation, not so much about when are you going to retire, but what are your plans for the next 5 years? What are your plans for the next 10 years? Right, that's right.
I can say from a strategic initiative, and I will tell, and I'm going to underline this, and everybody's going to nod and smile. You need to involve your human resources office and your employment law attorney if you are going to look at these options. But there are things like early retirement incentives or retirement incentives that can be put through for the company. That's a one-time deal. There's a lot that goes into that preparation, and there's a lot of legal pieces, but that can possibly help you in that situation as well.
That's right. You can do some incentive pieces to exit people out. The trouble with those, quite frankly, is you lose good people you had hoped to keep, and you keep people you'd hoped would take the exit strategy.
Yes. And Wade is very right, because one of the legal pieces is that once you pick the thresholds and you pick the offering, it is offered to everyone in that meets that criteria. So the one you may be wanting to keep could be getting that offer, and you can't exempt them from it. Okay. I had a question right here.
Osborne Wood Products is a company of 30 people, and my question is concerning offering educational value to our employees. I want to mention two employees. One's a young lady who is a millennial. She's sharp and would be interested in going into accounting, and I'd like to pay her education if she would stay with the company and go forward. The second employee is an employee who's interested in developing IT primarily for income. His GPA is under 3. He doesn't integrate with our IT systems very well. He's not the sharpest tool in the closet. I have less incentive to pay for his education than I do for the young lady. Can I treat these people differently in respect to offering incentives and payment for their future education?
Well, I would be careful with any precedent that you put forth. As far as, I would develop a whole program that addressed that. I mean, I would say something like perhaps not a full tuition reimbursement, but perhaps, a partial, some sort of partial scholarships, maybe even make it like that and have it a scholarship type of situation. And I can just hear the lawyer coming out of him.
He has
to jump in there.
Now, but let me say this. For years and years, the motto of HR has been, you have to treat everybody the same, right? And I've been doing this 32 years, and I'm more and more convinced that's not really true, okay? But if you're going to treat people differently, you need to be able to explain why, okay? So, and there's still some ways to do policies that... So you have a policy, a uniform policy, but it gets at the differences. So you could tie reimbursement to grades. You could tie it to a particular kind of major or program. There's different ways to do a policy that's a little more nuanced. But you know what? In a company of 30 people, yeah. I'm not sure a policy is necessary. So you can make those individualized assessments, but at the time, and you have some documentation, that you were able to explain why you did this for this one, but you didn't do it for that one. So you don't, you know, because 15 is the magic number for the Title VII protected category, so you're over the 15, but you can always treat people differently as long as it's not because of a discriminatory reason, and you're able to demonstrate the business reason at the time, not after the fact. So that's the key.
All right, well, we are slightly after 10 o'clock, so our time is up. I want to thank again my panel for being here. Hopefully they gave you some best practices. I saw some of you writing down some notes. And if you have any other questions, we have some things on leadership development and any other pieces for this. We can see you at 3:30 today, and we'll be hanging around with you for all the day. Thank you all for your attention, and it was a lot of